Nick Walenda joins us on Sports Byline, and he is the seventh generation member of the legendary Walenda family, known worldwide for his incredible feats on a high wire. And he is the holder of 11 world records, including the highest four-level eight-person pyramid on the wire, the highest and longest bicycle ride on a wire, and hanging from a helicopter by his teeth. And Nick's career began at the age of two as he learned to walk the wire while holding his mother's hand, leading from there to record-breaking performances around the world. In 2012, Nick fulfilled his lifelong dream to become the only person to walk directly over Niagara Falls. In 2013, he became the first person to walk a wire across the Grand Canyon. And in 2014, he walked blindfolded between two skyscrapers in Chicago. And finally, in 2020, Nick became the first person to walk over an active volcano in Nicaragua. There's no better person to talk to about facing fear than Nick Walenda, and he does that in his book, Facing Fear. Nick's book is a practical guide to overcoming fears. Nick, first of all, everybody has their own definition of fear. What is yours?
That's a good question. You know, I would say something that can control your thoughts to the point of debilitating you.
How hard is it to do that, especially in the field that you're in?
Yeah, look, I would tell you that because I was raised in this industry, walking a wire since I was 2 years old, that I didn't know fear was in my DNA until we had a bad accident about 2.5 years ago where we were training to set a world record for the highest four-level eight-person pyramid. In fact, we did break that record, but the following day during training, we had an accident where five of my family members fell. I caught the wire. But following up from that accident, I began to experience fear. As I would walk the wire, I would literally see, as if it was happening in real time, that pyramid collapsing in front of me time and time again.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that accident in just a moment, but let everybody know about the wonderful history of the Walenda family.
Yeah, so my family started performing back in the 1780s over in Bohemia, eventually making their way to Europe and Germany, and making their way to the United States as a performing high wire troupe for John Ringling and Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus in 1928, where they performed for about 18 years before my great grandfather Carl Walenda, who was a patriarch, began his own tour, his own show, where he performed that for many, many years, including creating his famous three-layer, seven-person pyramid on the wire, where they stack seven people tall, three layers high. On the wire in 1962, they were performing that pyramid when it collapsed. Many people know the history. Detroit, Michigan, that pyramid collapsed. Two of my uncles were killed. One of them was paralyzed from the waist down. The next day, my great-grandfather, who was injured pretty bad with a broken collarbone and several broken ribs, snuck out of the hospital to perform the next day and continued to perform against all those odds of that horrible accident until he was 73 years old when he was performing a walk that was minuscule in comparison to the others that he'd done, much smaller, much lower, much shorter. And he was walking Puerto Rico at 73 between two skyscrapers about 100 feet up when he ultimately fell to the ground and lost his life.
Nick, what was the driving force to let any of you in the Walenda family say, not say at least, that enough is enough? I mean, you kept going with this. Why was that? How were you able to do that?
You know, it's interesting. People often ask me that, why I do what I do. Why do we keep going against all of these challenges? And look, I think it's something from within. It's been in our family, as I mentioned, for well over 200 years now. And, you know, often people say it must be in your blood. And I would tell you that it is in my DNA. It is my passion. It's what I love to do. I think Carl Walenda, my great-grandfather, actually said it best when he said, life is on the wire and everything else is just waiting. And for our family, this isn't an occupation. It's not a job. It's not a thrill. It is truly who we are and what we do. So no matter what, when we do face these challenges, you know, Tiger Woods sprains an ankle, he doesn't stop or rest, he doesn't stop golfing. It's his passion. It's what he loves to do, and he continues to do it.
You know, there's a single-mindedness about what you do, and I respect that so much, but I'm just wondering if you're doing something in conjunction, especially with other members of the family, how does one get to a point where they don't worry about what somebody else is doing in the effort?
Yes, yes, that is the key. You're absolutely right. In fact, you know, as you mentioned, I've walked over, first person in the world to walk over the Grand Canyon, Niagara Falls, an active volcano. The reality is those are all solo walks. It's me, and I'm in control, and I've trained and I've prepared. when we attach ourselves to so many other people, the reality is we are trusting our lives in the hands of others. It is certainly a huge mental challenge. It is something that I talk about a bit in my book on Facing Fear, of how we can trust others, and sometimes we can overtrust others. And the risks are certainly much, much grander when we do involve others in these pyramids. And history's proven itself.
Nick, I would also assume, and correct me if you think I'm wrong about that, that you have to eliminate too much thought. You can overthink something, and that can be a detriment. Am I correct in that observation?
Absolutely. I can talk myself out of any one of the events that I do, any pyramid that I hold, any show. You know, again, in my book, I talk a lot about it, the power of the mind. People don't realize that we're in control of our thoughts. Our thoughts are not in control of us. And when my mind wants to go somewhere negative, like the fact that I might be facing 50-mile-an-hour winds, in fact, I did have three gusts of 48 miles an hour while I was walking across the Grand Canyon, 1,500 feet up, untethered. But I also can say, okay, but you've trained. I can counter that thought of freaking out, of fear, and counter it with something positive. And the fact that I trained with winds that actually exceeded 75 miles per hour, knowing that I wouldn't have an issue facing 40 to 50-mile-an-hour winds.
I'm going to share something with you. I've been rated in high-performance aircraft, and I'll never forget what my instructor said to me, Nick. He said, Ron, if you're flying 300 miles an hour, you better be thinking 301 miles an hour. I think you get the point. Is it the same way for you and what you're doing, not speed, but just the technique and the...
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very important that we're always, you know, it's my job as the leader of the troop to think about everything one step ahead of everyone else. And also just to feel the movement. I'll give you an example. When we're in that pyramid will start to sway back and forth. And I'm literally the shock absorber. So not only do I have to realize that I'm on the wire and pay attention and balance and focus on that, but I also have to focus on everyone else in order to balance everything out, thinking one step ahead of them.
When you're doing something with your troop, can you tell that particular day what type of frame of mind, what type of physical approach any of the members of the troop are going to be? I mean, it's a little bit like a pitcher in baseball. He's in the bullpen warming up. He can pretty much tell what he's got and what he doesn't that day. Is it the same way for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very important, too. We have very open conversations before every performance because of just that. I mean, my team knows. You know, in our world, it's the show must go on. It was just the way I was raised a couple hundred years in my family. Show must go on no matter what. I've walked a wire. I've held seven-person pyramid with a fractured ankle before. But what I will tell you is when I'm working with my team, I tell them, look, if you don't feel on today, if there's something off, I don't care what it is, we have no problem. You'll get your full paycheck. I'd rather stay on that wire knowing that we missed a show because you don't feel good.
Tell me a little bit, Nick, about how you analyze the events that you're going to do. I mean, how do you look upon it physically? How do you look upon it as challenge-wise? What's the breakdown when you decide to do something?
So, you know, first an idea will come to me, whether it be, I'll give you an example. I was flying into Mexico City to speak to a corporation over there. I do a lot of motivational speaking. And on the plane over, my wife happened to go with me. Her family, her father's side of the family is originally from there. And as we were flying over and about to land in Mexico City, we flew over an active volcano. And I remember sitting in the window seat, as I always do, and looking down and saying, you know what would be amazing? I looked at my wife, can you imagine walking a wire over an active volcano? And that's where that idea came from me. So from there, from concept, now it comes to I bring in my team, which is my uncle, who's my lead engineer, my father, who does all my safety and rigging coordination, and a few other members of my team. And we sort of assess the situation. Okay, you want to walk over a volcano. Here's the challenges. We got strong gases. We've got winds. We've got the gases could fog up your goggles. The cable could be deteriorate, those sort of things. Then after we kind of weed through all of those, then we go to location. So we start seeking an active volcano. There are only a handful around the world. So we'll go around the world and check them out. And then we'll find one that is ideal. And ideal for me is not what you would think. I want one that is 2,000 plus degree magma flowing. I want one with heavy gases. I want one that's a large expanse. This one was actually 1,800 feet across and 1,800 feet high. So I kind of look for what you would think I wouldn't look for. You'd think I'd look for the lowest, closest, not one that's smack gassy, you know, not much lava. But it's just the opposite because, again, it is about the challenge for me. And, again, it's about inspiring people that anything is impossible if you set your mind to it. So then we find the location. And then we find the challenges of that location. We put up anemometers and find out how strong the winds are. We find out how thick the gas is, if I'm going to have to wear goggles or a gas mask, those sort of things. We put cables in to test whether they are going to deteriorate and leave them up there for a couple months, those sort of things. And then we create a game plan, and then I start training to prepare for that. So I train with goggles. I train with a gas mask. I train with winds. I train with my eyes closed. I train on the cable that is loosely rigged, similar to what that would be, a longer distance. Again, trying to prepare for worst cases of what I might face out there. And then we go do it. You know, it's interesting. We in Nicaragua, we actually had several cables snap after the rigging was up because the gases had changed so much from 3 months before when we did testing. It actually deteriorated some of my stabilizer cables so bad that they snapped 2 days prior to that walk.
Fascinating conversation with Nick Walenda. Again, I want you to check out the book. It's called Facing Fear, and we'll continue with Nick as we move across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's sports talk show, Sports Byline. Nick Walenda is with us. Again, he has the book out. I hope you'll check it out. We'll talk a little bit more about it in this segment, Facing Fear. And he, of course, is a seventh-generation member of the legendary Walenda family, known worldwide for his incredible feats on a high wire. You told me a little bit earlier about what you look for. What is it that you don't look for?
Well, it's the unseens that are the most dangerous. So, again, you know, when we do tests, we find that the gases are, you know, the cables will withstand for, let's say, 8 weeks without failure. And then when days before you have a catastrophic failure, those are the things that catch you off guard. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't affect me physically. I know I can walk on a cable with less stabilizers and more movement. It affects me mentally because then I think, well, what if the main cable deteriorates to that point? Of course, it's a much thicker cable. It's going to take a lot longer. But it's the mind games. It really is the power of the mind and where we allow our mind to go. And if I allow that to freak me out 2 days before, I will not be able to take that first step. I've got to be prepared, so prepared physically that I'm so confident mentally that I'll make it from one side to the other.
Nick, has there been anything that you've really been fearful for about in your entire life?
You know, very, very few things. I would tell you, you know, I would normally answer that question. I have a healthy fear of God and a fear of my wife. About the only two things. But look, the reality is, of course, I face fears just like anyone else does. We're dealing with this crazy pandemic right now, and I catch myself sniffling, and immediately my mind goes to fear of, like, do I have coronavirus? Again, it's something that I've tried to practice my entire life. It's one of the blessings of being raised the way I was. It's really taking that fear and turning it into respect. Again, knowledge. You can gain knowledge of coronavirus. How do I avoid it? How do I stay healthy if I were to get it? How do I prepare? What vitamins can I take leading up to it? But that's been my life. But again, after this tragic accident we had a few years ago, unfortunately, I forgot everything I'd learned, and it came to the point where I didn't think I'd be able to walk the wire anymore.
Yeah, you mentioned that 2017 is when you had that accident. And I'm just wondering, you had to learn to get past it, to get back out on the wire. How did you do that?
You know, it was mind over matter. It really came down to the fact that I was allowing my mind to believe believe the lies in my mind. You know, it's really a numbers game. I've held the 7- and 8-person pyramid probably 3,000 times. One time I've fallen, but that one time is what has left an imprint on my brain. And again, to the point where when I was rehearsing to recreate that months after that accident, I began to tremble so bad that I remember going to my wife and saying, look, and I tell that story in my book, Facing Fear, but I remember saying, look, I don't know if I can get on the wire anymore. I think I'm done. And it was at that point, my wife comes from 8 generations of circus, the 3rd oldest circus in Australia. She has the same passions that I do. In fact, she has 3 Guinness World Records herself. But she said, look, I don't think you should give up. I respect you. And if you want to, I will respect that. However, your family for over 200 years has inspired people to not give up and that anything is possible. So she said, I think you need to sit down and think about that. And it was definitely the greatest challenge of my life, of my career, to overcome that fear that had just taken grip of my mind. But it really was a mental game. And it was really a process that I had to deal with of not allowing those thoughts of respecting quotations become thoughts of fear.
Do you ever feel selfish in what you're doing?
You know, I don't. Several reasons why. I'm carrying on a family legacy. It's my passion. But I'll also tell you this. If my wife, my parents, my children ever said dad or husband or son, I do not want you walking over that volcano, I would not walk over that volcano. I have a 100% respect for them and their decision as well. You know, generally speaking, they're in support of me. I'm chasing dreams. I am inspiring people. Very few people are able to live their dream out in life and love every moment that they're doing it. I am one of those that is blessed with that opportunity, and they see that, and they see the passion I have for it. Therefore, they respect it.
Nick, you know, what you do is so very unusual, but this book about facing fear is something that you want people to understand that this can apply to them as well. Tell me a little bit about how the average person can take what you say in this book and use it.
Absolutely, yeah. So the reason why I had no desire, to be honest, to write a second book. I've already written one balanced story of my family and my history and my life and the dreams that I was able to fulfill. And but after this accident and what I went through, and this being the greatest challenge, and what I do is certainly a very much a mental game every time I get on that wire. And for it to be able to tear that fear, to be able to tear down my mind so rapidly, to the point, again, where I was ready to give it all up and give up my passion. I knew that I believe that every negative experience or hardship we go through in life can be used for the good. And that really is what my goal was in this book, was to write a book that told my story of what I went through and the steps I had to take to overcome that fear in hopes that others can do the same. It is very applicable. In fact, it was written more to the business person that's scared to step out or the person who goes to work every single day and they're miserable because they haven't pursued their dreams. This book is about helping them overcome the fear that's holding them back from being great.
You know, Nick, it's interesting. In my years of interviewing athletes, especially the truly great ones, I find one thing that is consistent with them in motivation and drive, the fear of failure. And I've always found it very interesting because I think the great athletes aren't afraid to fail. I remember Michael Jordan saying to me, when the game is on the line, I want to be the one to determine the outcome. If I succeed, I want the glory. If I fail, I'll take the blame. And I think, as you know, whether you're an athlete or anybody else, everybody else probably, or at least most people, don't want to be blamed for something. Or is it the same way with you?
Look, I, as the leader of the troop, if you will, that is the responsibility I take on. And it does take a different kind of mind, a different kind of mindset and person to be willing to take that on. It is extreme responsibility. This isn't losing an NBA championship. This is losing your life and the lives of others. So, yes, the reality is, that is the way that I think. That is, I am willing to take the responsibility. I am willing to take the blame. I am willing to take the heat. And in the end, it comes down to the decisions that I make to lead this team.
No doubt about it. It's serious business, but I'm sure I've found in every profession there's some lighter moments as well. Funny things that when the person thinks back on it, they just smile and shake their head. How about for you?
Oh, goodness. I mean, everything from being, you know, stung by a bee on the wire during a pyramid to... you know, it's not funny at the time, but when you look back, you're like, what are the odds? A bird landing on my balancing pole. You know, birds don't expect you to be up between two skyscrapers 800 feet in the air. Those sort of things are what I kind of look back and like, what are the odds of that happening? Again, at the time, it throws off your balance. At the time, getting stung by a bee or having to sneeze or any of the above. But you just deal with it.
What are the dynamics that came into place when you were doing the blindfolded walk between the two skyscrapers in Chicago? Because vision is a very important instinct or to help your instincts. But when you're blindfolded, what did you have to adjust to?
Yeah, so I decided I was going to get LASIK surgery. And as I was filling out the paperwork, it was after Grand Canyon. I couldn't see. My eyes were very dry because of the dry air up above the canyon. I was wearing contact lenses. So I got LASIK surgery. When I was filling out the paperwork, basically it said if you lose your vision, you have a chance of losing your vision. You're taking that risk. And I remember that morning going back to my practice grounds after filling out that paperwork, you know, about a couple weeks before I was going to have that surgery, saying, I wonder if I could carry on my passion, continue to do what I do if I didn't have vision. And I began training with my eyes closed. And it was a whole new world to me, a whole new dynamic. Focus is so important when I'm on that wire and being able to visually see that wire and everything around me. So for it to go away, I took the most important sense that you could have as a wire walker away. And I started relying on sound. So then at that point, I put on headphones with white noise. So I couldn't even focus on sounds. And it was really all about every movement, the minute movements in my arms, as well as feeling every single speck of a movement in my feet.
Fascinating. When you look back on your career, is there one particular moment, Nick, that's kind of engraved in your mind that you'll never forget?
Wow, there are countless, countless moments. The moment that the law was written, legislation was changed, signed by Governor Cuomo to allow me to become the first person in the world to walk across Niagara Falls is one that certainly sticks out. Not related to wire walking, although it was, because I wouldn't have been able to do that walk without it. You know, the walk that took my great-grandfather's life in San Juan, Puerto Rico, recreating that, you know, that is by far my favorite walk and the most intimate walk that I'd ever done in my career.
We only have a minute left, but what do you want people to take away from this book, Facing Fear?
You know, more than anything, I want people to walk away from this book empowered to overcome the fears that are holding them back from being great.
Do you always smile when you think back about your life and what the path was you chose?
Absolutely, man. I talk about the setbacks in my first book, and I think that true champions become champions by getting up every time they're knocked down, and I can promise you I was knocked down more than most.
What's the best piece of advice you ever got, Nick?
Really, it's from my great-grandfather, which didn't come directly. He passed away a year before me, but it's never give up. No matter what, never give up. He said the show must go on. I've just changed those words that are more applicable to you and me, which are never give up.
Nick, I want to thank you very much, and congratulations on your great career, also your great family as well. And I hope people will check out the book, Facing Fear. You're welcome here anytime on Sports Byline, Nick.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Such an honor.
Nick Wallendo is with us, seventh-generation member of the legendary Wallendo family, known worldwide for his incredible feats on a high wire, and he is the holder of 11 world records, including the highest four-level, eight-person pyramid on the wire. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.